there and sold all the stuff.
It's the best one.
Go ahead, I'll just see if I can find some out.
All right, we'll go ahead and begin. Well, good afternoon, everybody. Had some enjoyable, what's the deal? I did push it. I hope it's not working. One of those that might come back and bite you someday. Things like music are easy for me. They're enjoyable and they're fun and just, come on in. I'm sure we can find some more chairs.
Just stand in the back. I'm gonna grab some chairs.
David's the guy for it. This time of the day in school is usually one of my toughest times of the day, just because it's afternoon.
What
and
chairs do we need here? What, nobody wants that seat right in front of Brian, or what?
They long for it. Especially Aaron, I know this guy. We got one wrong answer already this morning about the salt.
Wait, what are we all
saying? No, Frank, you didn't understand.
I hope they delete some of this stuff off the recording when they when they do get caught.
The greater good.
That's right.
Depends how close to Brian you
want
to be.
They want to be close. Always pick on the back ones, not the front ones. Yeah, you're safe.
Is there room for a chair back there? You want one, Paul? I'll throw it to you.
Where are you going to sit?
All right, well, I was going to do something. I was somehow imagining the auditorium for something like this and not quite everybody in any, these individual seats. So we'll do a little thing here right off the bat and see how many of you are parents but not teachers. Any of you want to raise your hand if you're a parent but not a teacher? We almost have them separated. Good, so we might need you guys' perspective. How many of you are teachers? How many of you are teachers? Anyone not a teacher? How many of you are not a teacher? Okay, well, outside of you parents, of course. So, I was going to have you sit in separate places so that we could see, you know, one against the other, but actually, this is a lot better. We'll figure it out as we go. I'm going to draw something up here right off the bat. And you see if you can tell me, whoops, a little lopsided, what it is. What is that? A little bit cuckoo, but anyway. It's the cross, okay? Hopefully, as a teacher and as a parent, you have this cross, which is the symbol of what? What? What's this?
Suffering, burden.
Okay. It's the symbol of Christ Jesus, is it not? In our minds, we see the cross, we think of Christ. So, I'm going to do something here, and see if I can get it right. Like this. Should have probably made sure all these are working, but they aren't too bad. This isn't right. There we go. Christians and, how can I do this? Communicate, there we are. Christians communicating, all right? That's in the cross. Communicating through the cross. Now, if you're a Christian school teacher and you have Christian parents, isn't that about as simple as you should have it, isn't it? Here's something else I'm going to draw up here. I will hopefully find at least one marker that works the way I like it. As I dispose of these, Dave, you can cast them into the den of lions. Here's a good one. What is that? Any Sherlock
Holmes?
A spoon. See, Aaron, He doesn't get things right very often. No, no, it's not a spoon.
A planet.
Coonskin cap.
If I were to hold on to this thing like that.
Frying pan.
It's a magnifying glass, and it's easy.
Okay. Magnifying glass.
It's not difficult to see this. It's a magnifying glass. Okay, man. All right. This is not to guess on that one. That is Christ. Okay. We look through this thing, and we see. I'm going to put three different things that we see when we look through the lens of Christ. Okay. It is our pupils. It's our parents, and it's our board. Not that we don't, we should look through the lens of Christ in everything. But those are the things that we're kind of looking at today. I'm going to draw one more. I'm a real artist. Get me going, can't stop. This is kind of a beaker type thing, and it's full of this. I'll put this off over here. It's positive communication. Now, as this stuff goes back and forth, and if there is any heat applied, we'll put this little flame down here, it just bubbles out on everything. The people around you, the students around you, and this is kind of what happens. You get to smile over that, all right? Now, if you're not a smiling person, you just, maybe you should work on it. That would be my encouragement to you. Learn to smile. Learn to affirm. All right? I don't have a handout. Partly because I'm not a techie guy like I should be. I'm slow on that. So, get your notebooks and pens out. Be ready to take notes. That's how you'll keep track of this this workshop. All right. I want you to write this down, please. Everybody get your pens and papers out. Redemption revives your responsibility, okay? Redemption, this is a study in alliteration. Redemption revives your responsibility. Responsibility revives relationships. And redeemed relationships rejoice in the resurrection, okay? So I'll read that to you again. Everybody ready? It's hot in here. Redemption revives your responsibility. Responsibility revives relationships. Redeemed relationships rejoice in the resurrection. So that is essentially this right here. Keep that in mind. You burn it into your head. The cross of Jesus, no matter who you're relating with, whether it's your students, your parents, your board, that never gets violated. All right, ever. That's terribly important. How many of you, when you became a teacher, knew that you would be relating with parents and look forward to that the most? That's what we're talking about today, is relating with parents. All right? How many of you looked forward to it? Raise your hand. Just her. Okay, well, you've got a good parent to deal with, so that's good. most of us don't necessarily just long for more and more parental relationships. Someone said this morning they're actually scared of parents. I'm not sure where Jonah is, but... And then he gave some examples. How many of you run a business? Any of you run a business? Okay, a few of you. How many of you enjoy the part of going and collecting the money? Is that a difficulty? You enjoy it? Oh, I hope so. Someone said that's the part no one else wants to do. I don't believe that. We love to go collect money. It's amazing how you acquire the gift of gab. While they're writing the checks out, I had this one person I worked for. He would breathe heavily. Every time he was writing a check out, it was just this heavy breathing. But with the light chatter back and forth, it was a duty that quickly happened. And the check came, and that was always good. I loved it. I still like to collect money. Sadly, I don't do much of it. I'll tell you something, a little clue here. Relating with parents is not that different than relating with customers. All right. In fact, a lot of times it's easier because the customers that you deal with are not all Christians. And that's something for you to remember as a parent and as a teacher, that we're Christians. We have every reason to be successful in our resolution of any problem. All right, now unless you're a specialist where you're just going to go work on the job, you're going to have to work with other people, and it kind of gets you out of that comfort zone. I know I had a garage door business, and that was actually the part that I dreaded the most, was writing the bills out and going and meeting the people. And it became the part that I love the most. I miss it. I miss meeting all kinds of different people and people calling me on the phone and all that. It's neat. And actually, if you can kind of keep that active conversation and dialogue with your parents, you'll get along well. So we're going to... Dan, I enjoyed his talk very much this morning, but he talked about a word which we've already mentioned a couple of times. But it's kind of the essence of relationships. Anyone want to guess what that is?
Communication.
Communication, all right, good. This again, I have a hard time keeping track of the right one. This is the one I want to name. Communication. And I want to just think about how we communicate real quickly. I'm going to write them up here. I've got clearly. Clearly, let's see, I get this thing up here. Kindly. Dan had some words this morning about how you communicate. How was that? Anyone remember the words? Nobody write those, at least three things that he wrote, that he said very neatly. Well, you keep thinking about it, see if you remember them. Kindly, tactfully. And emphatically at times. And if you're a parent, sometimes it's empathetically. All right. This comes down to one really clean word. All right? And it's probably one that we all know, and of course we're all good at. And it's this. Effective. Effective communication is clear, it's kind, it's tactful, is also emphatic sometimes, and as much as possible, it's empathetic. What does empathetic mean real quickly so we know what it is? It's a word we don't use all the time. What's empathy? How do you, so when you feel with somebody like that, empathy would mean that you've experienced this, okay? You've experienced it as well. So you can't have empathy if you haven't actually experienced something. However, you can at least listen compassionately, all of that. Communicating with parents is one of the joys of teaching. I have a cup that someone gave me that says the joys of teaching are without number. And this is the number, since it has no number. It's zero. So the joys of teaching are without number. Well, that's just a joke. All right. I'm going to say this as well. If you can't handle the opportunity, which is the way you need to look at this thing of communicating, if you can't handle the opportunity of communicating with parents, you can't handle teaching. You need to be able to do it. You are big people. The people you are dealing with are very important to your students, and you have to bridge the gap. All right? You have to figure it out. So we'll keep working on some ways on how we can bridge this gap. Now... This, I have this written down as well. Outside trades will teach you as much about school teaching as any other thing that you can do. For me, running a garage door business for 10 years or whatever was one of the biggest helps I've had in my classroom. It was tremendous. Clear. Say no, yes, whatever, you know. Those are gifts. So that brings in the point someone told me once that if you want to be a good teacher, you should have a trade mastered outside the classroom. So how many of you have a trade mastered outside the classroom? I know some of you guys have to.
I can eat pizza.
He's a professional glutton. Good. Very good. Girls, any of you have any trades mastered outside the classroom? We've got one spirited individual here. Girls, any trades mastered? Well, maybe it's a challenge. You raising your hand? Okay, what do you have?
Jam.
Jam. Good. You can pick them up. Learn to do them. One of the things that I've had to do, which is takes me outside my comfort zone a lot more than talking to parents, is try to help build pole barns and that type of thing. Anyone build pole barns here? It's an awful experience. Yeah. Sadly, I grew up in a community of construction, and I'm still just terrible at it. However, there are some things I learned about from the pole barn business, and that is those guys have to work pretty fearlessly in all kinds of weather, and that should inspire your joy when you go into the classroom. I remember going into the classroom a few years ago, and it was cold. Up in Canada, it gets really, really cold, and this was, I don't even know what it was. It was probably 20 below. That's a going temperature all the time, it seems like, and the snow was just blowing in the air straight. And across the fields about a mile, which you can see forever, these guys were setting trusses that day on a big shop, setting trusses way up in the air, 20 feet high or something like that, on a wind that was just terrible. There are guys doing that while we're hunkered down in that miserable little warm classroom, drinking coffee and writing things down in our book. You know, that's terribly hard work, writing and figuring things out with kids that are actually pretty friendly, a lot of them. When you get used to them, it's hard to always go back. We are going to do some stuff up here. We're going to kind of split the teachers and parents a little bit and think about what each one might think or do and see how we can bring them together. So, as a tradesman, how do you relate with your customers? We're going to learn from the trades here this afternoon. How do you relate? What is the golden rule of business, you might say, dealing with people? Yes, sir. The
customer's always right.
The customer is always right. Write it down. Don't forget it when you have a business. It is one maddening rule. Okay, customer's always right. We, of course, know that the parent here is the customer, right? But he is not always right, or she isn't always right. However, the parent is the ultimate authority for the child, is he not? Here, at least for quite some time, you are teaching their child, right? The parent is not taking your child home for the night. It's very important to remember that distinction. You are the parent's servant, all right? So when you come to a crossroads, whatever, somehow you as a professional, which is what you are, you are a educational professional. You are getting paid for this. You're a professional, so act like one. You need to come up with a resolution. You as the professional need to come up with a resolution, not the parent. All right, the parent should as well, since he's a Christian and all that. However, it's your responsibility as a teacher. So, one of the ways you can do that is don't try to change the parents, all right? Don't speak into their life so much that they've got to start putting their child in bed earlier. They've got to start teaching them a work ethic. They can't let them be entitled. That's not something you can necessarily change. Could those windows be open back there by any chance? It's pretty warm up here, and I don't like people dozing. There's an old joke about this newlywed groom, and he looked at his wife that he just married, and he said, "Oh, she's so beautiful, she'll never change." And she does. And the wife looks at her husband and thinks, "Oh, she just wait till I get him changed the way I want him," and he never does. So that's the beauty of relationships. You're not going to change the parent very quickly. One thing I'd like you to think about as a teacher. What you usually have when relating with the parent is you have ideas. I would hope you would. You would project a good idea on how we can fix a problem if there is one there. But the neat thing about ideas is they are ideas. Right? Just because you came up with it, you as a brilliant person, doesn't always mean that your idea is just stunningly diamond-likely brilliant, to use that word. It may have flaws, it may have all kinds of faults, so you need the parent's balance to help you get to the resolution. Let's see if I can find something else here. One of the things that can help with a parent while relating with the teacher, just give this to you, and one thing that the teacher should expect. He should respect, should expect respect, and he should give it. Respect is a big thing while you're dealing with people. It comes down to trust a lot of times. When a teacher is talking to a parent, he needs to trust him, doesn't he? And it's a sad deal if the parent doesn't trust the teacher. However, the parents have almost all trusted the teacher already. He's allowing his child to go to school. So someone talked about the trust that the job you've been entrusted with, what a huge deal that is. All right. One thing, I already said this about changing parents. One thing that can be a temptation is if you ever have a PTA where everybody's together and it's a good time to change things, kind of, you think in your mind. It's easy for a teacher, I'm going to put this over here on the negative side, to scold. We're good at scolding anyway, sometimes, some teachers are. Easy to scold the parents or grandparents or whatever. What happens when you scold somebody? I'm talking about a scolding.
They get defensive.
They do. They just immediately hackles are up. They're worried about it. And so what happens then after the defensiveness happens?
Generally quit listening to what you have to say.
Okay, quit listening. This is on the negative side here. Quit listening. And just clam up, right? Mm-hmm. Some you wish would. Others clam open, whatever you want to say. They really open up, don't they? Well, I guess they speak up. But here's what's happened. When you scold, you have just opened yourself up to all kinds of criticism. It's like this. Someone says, you have a problem with me? Well, I have 10 problems with you. That's just the natural human response, even though we all have that cross in our hearts and minds. Believe it or not, Christians don't always respond in a Christ-like way. That's maybe the beauty of Christianity, actually, is that we're not all perfect. He was a teacher on either. And you expect the parents and the students to put up with that, don't you? Sure you do, because you make all kinds of mistakes as you go. I'm going to put another word down here that sometimes teachers are. It's a punching bag. Isn't that awful? How many of you have ever had a parent really chew you out? Anybody? Well, quite a few of you. How many of you just loved it? Every moment, enjoyed the way that felt afterwards, you were a better person, right? It's a great deal. Usually with pain comes some kind of learning, doesn't it? But here's some things that a parent is coming from. They don't always know the two sides of the story, do they? So when your parents are listening to your student, you need to trust the teacher. And here's something I'm going to put down with both, whatever you want to call them, teachers and parents. You listen. Actually listen to each other. Hopefully get to more of that later, but you think of this, that the teacher and the parent are both redeemed individuals, we hope. And sometimes the students are, but sometimes they aren't. A student is often very emotional and hurt and angry. And he can convey that emotion right into his parent, who calls while he or she is angry. And what is your responsibility now as a professional? What is it? It's to understand, isn't it? That these people are hurt and angry and stressed. Maybe something just, it's just been terrible. So you understand that, and you don't respond likewise. You don't even condemn them in your mind or your heart. You understand. That's where the empathy comes in. That, you know what? It hurts when your child does something that causes you, the parent, to lash out at a teacher. You don't belittle in your mind that these parents are just calling me up again and they're upset. What can we do? Sometimes this is what you are, and you be broad-minded enough to handle it. You're a punching bag. That's not fun. Now, on that line, pupils do have an, not sure how to say it. Pupils have a strong sense of fairness. Boy, that is one messy R, fairness. How many of you agree with that? Yeah, actually, as a rule, they are quick to say that, you know, he got two, whatever, and I only got one. We're all able to hear that and understand that. Someone mentioned a story about a highway patrol person this morning and his learning. This past summer, I worked for a highway patrolman, and he had an interesting story. At the beginning of his career, he ran after a guy who evaded arrest, chased him down, and I don't know what the whole story was, but he was just a young patrolman. Chased him down, took him down, and used whatever force he had to do to get him handcuffed and whatever. He had no sympathy, and when he got done, he wrote every ticket he could come up with. And this was a black man, so that black man turned around and sued him for, I don't even remember what it was now, racial discrimination, maybe. Sure how the whole thing was. And of course, this was a big white guy, and he was totally innocent of that. He knew he was. However, he said he learned an important lesson. This was the beginning of his career. He was in a courthouse soon after that, defending himself, or his lawyer was, or whatever. And as they picked the jury, they asked, how many of you think you have ever received an unfair ticket? And there was not one hand. And this is what this was based on. This man felt that he'd been ticketed unfairly or unduly. And he said he learned that was an important lesson that day, was that you try to be fair, all right? You don't have to do everything that you can do. You be fair. So if someone feels they've been violated, maybe it's your something to work with. All right. Here are the words that Dan said about communication. Anyone else remember them yet? At least three of them. All right. Oh, they were beautiful. I'd never quite heard them like this, so I'm going to write them across the board. You can write them down. Here's one, humility. And this triggering any memories yet? I love it if people are awake and listening and alive. Humility. What else?
Openness.
Openness. Beautiful. Thanks. My favorite one is just around the corner. What was that?
Loudness.
Did you say loudness?
Just shot.
You know, Aaron is good at shooting, but poor shot. That's all there is to it. It was with invitation. I had not ever thought of invitation as it related to communication. And he said, invite people to help be a part of the solution. Super stuff. Okay. Well, do we rattle through this? We're going to clear this board up here, and we're going to just look at some more effective ways of communicating. We're just going to write them down. We've already written a bunch down. We'll write some more down. Or maybe you've got something that you're burning to share really quickly. Anyone have something that you want to add to this class before we keep moving? All right. I'm going to name this one Effective Teacher Communication. And same thing, we'll put parents over here since they don't deserve quite all as much as we've got over here, all the words. All right. First one is be positive. How many of you ever had to go to a parent and talk to them? Any of you? Okay. How do you do that? What is the perfect way to approach a parent? How many of you love when a parent talks to you and he says, I'm just going to be open with you? How many of you just think, yeah, you know where we're headed, don't you? We're going to be open, all right, and there's only going to be one of us left hanging. So, how do you talk to somebody? Jen?
Faith Builders says I learned this from Faith Builders, to give them sandwiches. Give them something good, and then you can say something negative if you need to, and end with a positive thought again.
I've heard that too. And this one person told me once, there was one person who talked to me over and over and over. This was actually a younger person, but it was about music. And he would struggle with, he said that he always likes to give three things. One negative and two positives. So that's the sandwich that she's talking about. Two positives, one negative. Somehow, when he gave it to me, it was only the negative, the meat that I got. I never got the positives, sadly, much as I encouraged him to tell me them. Just couldn't seem to do it. So, here's something that we sometimes have in our, if we're being the opposite of positive, and that is a preformed judgment. Or sentiment, or whatever you want to say, toward the parents, toward the student. And someone told me, before you go in a classroom, this was way before I taught, before you go in a classroom, you should never enter a classroom with preformed sentiments or bias toward anybody. And that's sometimes hard to do when you know all the people, and you might even have crossed swords quite a few times with either the students or parents. So no preformed animosity. We, of course, know animosity is almost never good. I don't know how it ever could be good. Okay, here's another one. Be gentle. We know that when a certain parent stalks through the door, either in the morning or in the evening after school, that, well, there's trouble ahead, isn't there? Do the parents think the same about you? That they know that when they see the teacher waiting by the door at church, that maybe they'd better go a different way. Sometimes we're tempted as teachers. You see the ambush ahead, and you could evade this, you know. Be gentle. And I also hate it if you're giving all these positive things to people, and they know there's something else coming. So it's hard to trick adults who have, you know, three or four kids that have run through school. They know where we're headed when they see the teacher with a need on his heart and he needs to talk to you. A way of being gentle is, even in your speech, the way you frame your words is important, all right? If you're ever a salesman, you need to be careful how you say sentences, don't you? So if you're a teacher and you come up to you girls or whatever and you say, you know, your kid just has the biggest ego problem I've ever seen in school. He just thinks he's better, whatever. How gentle was that? And how well received will that be? We all know the answer. It's not going to be received well. It comes from a condemning heart, so you need to keep that in mind. Be tactful, but straight. A lot of times, I like to say good things about students, but you know, a lot of parents already realize they know the good things, and they want to know what's actually the issue here. So don't spend too long a time building your sandwich over something that is not good. Sometimes you just have to get it straight. You be very kind and clear, but you try to leave as little doubt as to what's happening and everything that you can to help. Here's another one. Unthreatening. All these are kind of unthreatening and you be unthreatened, which unthreatening and a little bit slowly. Don't spring too much on a parent right off the bat. How many of you are used to horses? Anyone? Any horse people here? Come on, come on. Just one. And Neil, what is, have you ever saddled any kind of horse that's a little bit scared or anything like that? You guys? You have? How about you? What do you do? Okay. You talk to him and you move slowly, right? No sudden moves, no phones ringing all of a sudden and banging off the walls. No, you talk to it. You give it sugar cubes. So if a guy comes up to you and he's giving you money and talking to you, you probably know the saddle is not far behind. Just take it easy. Also, expect and trust your parents that it's gonna be good. This will be a better classroom than it was before. And of course, we would never do this, but sometimes I should maybe put this over here since this is probably what's happened more from parents to teachers. Never ambush. I remember one of the worst chewings out I got was right after a program, and it was the end of the year, and if you're a teacher and you've been there a while, maybe, especially the first couple years, boy, the end of the school year was a big deal and just about emotionally ragged for some reason. No good reason for being that way, but boy, the one person came up and just, oh, it hurt so badly. And it was definitely an ambush, so be careful with your parents that you're talking to. You take it easy and you don't ambush them. There's a huge relationship built on trust between the teacher and parents. All right, think about Christ. Use him for an example on how he talked. Always keep him there. Always ask him for his help. All right, and here's one more. This kind of is not necessarily just about communication, but it's some things that a parent can look at a teacher and be unhappy about. So here's what I'm going to write down, and it's competence. If you are a competent teacher, how many of you would consider yourselves competent teachers? How many of you obsess about your failures or your weaknesses? That's probably something you don't want to do too much, is obsess about your failures or whatever, because we have enough of them. Everybody has them, all right? So I'll tell you something. This is a word you'll want to think about. I'll write this over here at an angle so you remember. Confident competence. That's us. All of us. I wish sometimes. However, confident competence relaxes parents, all right? Parents don't mind. They're not threatened by your competence. As a rule, the better I am at something, the more people relax. They enjoy it. They don't mind talking to you. Remember what I said about unthreatening and unthreatened? When you're threatened, I mean, you are more easily threatened over things you don't know much about, aren't you? Yeah. Because maybe you're trying to bluff your way or whatever, you have to look good somehow, or you know, you get this complex going that I'm easily threatened. My hackles are up as well as my parents. All right, I put this down a bunch of times, but the bottom line is you can't do this enough. You can't really trust your parents enough, all right? And listen. Your parent has a problem, listen. When they come to you and tell you what went wrong at school, and you're already answering them before they're even done saying the problem, that isn't listening. I've heard the statistic, I don't know what it is, 7 seconds or something, that someone will listen before they start formulating a response. Train your mind not to do that. Listen till they're done. And this is a gift, not just for teachers, but for husbands and wives and all that good stuff as well. Listen. Give someone a chance to talk. All right. All right. Well, we're going to cut off a bunch. Here's the thing. The bottom line between parents and teachers is that they both want the best for the child, all right? And if you understand that, you can work for it. As a teacher, you need to have ideas about how that's going to happen. It's not the parent's responsibility to come in your classroom and think that, you know what, maybe you teaching this child spelling words with red words and green words and blue words will help him remember. That's your job. So it's your job to be creative. Now, when I put this word competence up here, I'm going to say something here that you may like and you may not, but I have a problem with teachers who are involved in their cell phones at work, all right, or while they're teaching. How many of you agree that a phone is a distraction? Okay, I'll generalize the phone thing. Any distraction. Worked with somebody a while back, and I'm a garage door guy, and I really like focused work, all right? That's something that I like things laid out, and when it's time to work, then you really lay it down. If I see a guy with his phone, he's relaxing like this for 2 or 3 minutes, I know he's not checking voicemails that have to be done. What's he doing? That's the question that goes through my mind. I don't know what he's doing, but I don't like it. I want people on point, all right? And that's what a parent wants to see when he comes in and sees his teacher, his child's teacher. He wants them on point, ready to work. And I think it's a breach of professional etiquette to have a big distraction like your phone causing a problem. So cut that thing off. If you have to do something during recess, maybe you do have to. But I'd sure be careful about it, even at recess. You know, some just thing will pull it out at recess, answer a few texts. You know what? The recess is gone, and you've missed it, all right? Recess is just as important as any other time, and guess what? Very likely that's going to be the problem that your parent comes and talks to you, happened at recess while you were on your phone. I'm, of course, jumping ahead here. Keep the phone businesslike. It's supposed to be a tool that increases productivity, not diminishes it, wouldn't you say? All distractions have the potential usually to go one way or the other. Thank you very much. Any questions? All right, you're dismissed. Have a good afternoon. Boy, it is hot. I don't have any fans or anything that could stir the air.